Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Last Dragon Con. Welcome to our Dragon Con 2017 edition episode. We're recording this like the week after Dragon Con. I think I may have caught up on sleep by now.
I don't know. I think I've caught up on sleep, but I definitely think I left with a little bit of the crud.
Oh yeah, I think
and some post Dragon depression.
Yeah, there's always that like, oh, we gotta wait another year. So, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So, this week we got something special. This is going to be Southern Draw. The name of the cigar is Jacob's Ladder. And
just released at this year's 2017 IPCPR. So, it's so new, it's not even on their website yet. But it's so far, it's a nice wake-up smoke to get back in the
groove. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say a wake-up smoke if it's afternoon. Like, this is not
it's not a wake and bake
smoke.
This is like one to like you know get you fired up, because it's definitely a full-bodied, full flavor cigar. It's got a broadleaf wrapper from Lancaster, PA, with Ecuadorian Maduro leaf and fillers from Nicaragua, including double Lajero from Esteli. So yeah, this is gonna have a bit of a kick for you.
Yeah, and that's one thing I got to say that I enjoy. I mean, this cigar started right off the bat with, all right, there's the intensity, and it's in your face, and it's bold, and I'm absolutely loving it so far. You know, one of the cool things about Southern Draw Cigar Company is they have a tendency to, you know, name their cigars after flowering plants.
Yeah, they have like a kudzu and a so it's definitely a Southern company.
But
no actual kudzu is used in the making of that cigar, by the way.
But another thing, you know, obviously with, you know, Jacob's, if you want to, you know, tie that into, you know, biblical reference and that type of thing, you know, so you could make the connection, you know, when you think back to the Old Testament about, you know, Jacob and, you know, being the son of Isaac and, you know, basically, you know, connecting, you know, heaven and earth, you know, so is this a smoke of biblical proportion?
Wow.
I mean, that's the beauty of cigars, right? I mean, you can take something and you can make of it, you know, what you will. So, hey, we could talk flowering plants. We can get into philosophy a little bit. You know, you can even go back to, you know, how, you know, Jacob's Ladder was actually used for medicinal purposes in ancient Greece. So, I mean,
there's also a pretty cool movie called Jacob's Ladder. Oh, but yeah, and also, you know, to help you, you know, the thing that got us through Dragon Con and kept me awake was Strike Force Energy. StrikeForceEnergy.com, use the promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. Yeah, I brought like 20 of those things, and they did not, like, I ran out Sunday night, so. Like.
Well, you were also sharing and everything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that, you know, Strike Force didn't do what it was intended to do. It was.
I didn't bring enough. I should have brought the 750 bottle and just kept that going all weekend.
Cause. I mean, you know, it's just like pie, you know, when you're sharing with friends and everything, all of a sudden those gallons, they seem like just droplets in a vast ocean.
Oh, yeah. What you're about to hear is our episode that we recorded live at Dragon Con. Last year, we kind of did it toward the end of Con, where this we recorded on Friday. So we hadn't had much time to get into shenanigans yet. So we decided to wrangle up a newbie, that a first year con goer, and get their impressions of Dragon Con. So we got a little bit of a interview, a newbie segment, and then kind of talked about the geek year in review. So, you know, we'll come back and give you our final thoughts on this cigar and our final thoughts on this year's Dragon Con toward the end of the episode. And we've also recorded several interviews while we're there, so we're going to have two of those for you as well. So, yeah, if you want to learn about some science from actual scientists and a little bit of Star Wars and writing news, stay tuned for that as well. And we'll be right back.
Hello, can you hear me? I am gaming at America's Mart, and my signal's pretty weak. We just started Arkham Horror. I'll get back to you in just a couple hours when I'm free. There's just two hotels between us, but a million Deadpools.
Welcome back to the podcast. Here we are, Dragon Con Edition 2017. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And, you know, since it's Dragon Con, we've talked a lot about it. We've been here several times ourselves. We decided to, on this episode, kind of introduce a new segment called Interview a Newbie. So we have wrangled a first-year Dragon Con TND out in the wild and brought them in here to record with us. Please welcome the Ginger Avenger, Amanda, to the podcast.
Gee, thanks. Appreciate it so much.
So, we're only here on Friday, so we've only been here for like 2 days. So, what have you seen so far? Like, what are your first impressions of Dragon Con?
I have seen too much, or at least to some degree. It's crazy. Crazy.
Have you seen it? Great. A particular favorite costume or made it to a particular favorite panel yet?
Well, I've only made it to one so far, so.
But, I mean, it was a pretty big panel, right?
Well, yeah, it was huge, actually, but.
Who was that with?
Nathan Fillion.
So, I mean, that's.
I mean, that's like a nerd girl's dream right there, you know, guys.
Almost.
Hell, nerd boy's dream, too. I wouldn't mind seeing Nathan Fillion. We couldn't get into the panel.
Secondary dream. Still haven't seen Kevin Sorbo. That's the dream.
There's still hope.
Yes, there is. That's
find
that's a
Kevin
must
Sorbo
do.
Before the weekend's over.
Sunday. You must do that.
So is there anything that you have seen that you're like, I did not expect this?
A little bit more body parts than I expected to see, at least without some kind of spandex or mesh or something over them. But, you know, if you're comfortable, that's fine.
So will you return is the question.
I haven't made, let me make it through the whole weekend. We'll talk.
Yeah. I mean, with Dragon Con, there's just so much that is going on to do, to see. I mean, it's a, you know, if you're into people watching, I mean, it's a people watchers, you know, dream. If you're into checking out panels, learning about games, learning about different, you know, whether it be history tracks, science tracks, gaming, something for everybody here.
Yeah, we have not had a chance to get out and do much because we've been working interviews for you fine listeners that you will hear coming up sometime in the next few episodes. We did have our annual Dragon Con cigar group meetup last night, which I don't think the Red Foam is prepared for the amount of cigar smokers that showed up, because we literally filled that place to capacity.
Oh, yeah.
There was a line of people.
At one point, they were turning people away. Yeah.
Oh. And they have, like, super-duper industrial air purifiers, and, like, it was like a cloud of smiling. It's like, I can't see the person next to me.
It's back when we used to pack 6-8 cigar smokers in Nerd Cave South and do our late night Cards Against Humanity and, you know, board game sessions.
So, Amanda, how was your Dragon Con, like, cigar meetup? Since that was also your first year.
Oh, it was good. And then I decided to take it one step a little too far, maybe just chase too many fairies down too many holes. And
since we're specifically, we mean the green fairy absinthe, which is 130 proof, and they serve a fine glass of that at the Red Foam booth.
I manned up like a champ.
Oh, so, you know, and we've ventured out into the dealer's room and seen that, like, mass of humanity there. And there's so many different things. I mean, pirate wear, steampunk wear, 150 million different nerdy t-shirt combinations. You know, if you need to stock your nerd wardrobe, just come to Dragon Con. You might need a truck to haul all the stuff away in, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff to find over
there. That's always my problem. Like, I pack, you know, in preparation for con, and then it's like, man, I just need an empty suitcase or something just to be able to, you know, take all my wares and everything back to home base with me after con wraps up.
It should just, you know, there's bags of holding and stuff over there. Just buy you a bag there.
Yeah, too bad it's not like the video games. Too bad I can't just, you know, buy additional inventory slots or something.
Just stick it in your inventory and pull it when you need it.
Exactly. Or we just hire a Sherpa to carry all our gear.
Make like a link, you know? I mean, I don't know how these guys do it with, you know, 7 bows and a combination of 300 arrows on their back, few swords, several different sets of armor. Like, here I am. I hold like 4 things and I'm done.
So, you know, it's Dragon Con as always. Is there anything you've seen so far yet, Brad, that, like, your favorite costume or whatnot?
I mean, not really a costume. I thought it was really cool that, you know, as we were perusing the dealer hall, we actually, you know, was passed by Stan Lee and his entourage. So, you know, that was cool, you know, seeing Stan the man.
It was kind of like a Marvel movie cameo, but in real life.
Yes.
Because we're just running, and all of a sudden security guys are like, part the way. And here comes, like, Stan zooming by on his little scooter heading to his booth, which pretty much, like, he has, like, half of a floor in the dealer's hall, because they're like, yeah, there's going to be a line for Stan's booth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh. So did you see anything in the dealer's hall that you're like, I have to, like, take home with me?
Not until I find a Daddy Warbucks that's going to pay for it all for me, but yeah, I need a U-Haul.
I mean, I think for me, too, in addition to, you know, just all the clothing, is the artwork. You know, that's always one thing that just amazes me, you know, whether it be people doing oil paintings or, you know, different takes on certain prints. I mean, that's one of the ways that, you know, I decorate the Nerd Cave and everything else is, you know, you always find original and unique things.
Yeah, there's one artist we stopped and talked to, and I can't remember his name right now. It's Christian something, but he does the Reflection series of paintings, where it's like paintings of Darth Vader or Boba Fett, but in the reflections of the helmets and stuff, there's like almost like a whole nother painting, like in the reflective surfaces of the painting. And I'm like, one of these days I'm gonna, like, bring enough money to actually take one of those paintings home with me, because they always look so amazing. I mean, and they're new every year. He has like a, you know, like almost like a whole new series every show. You have to go by there and, like, see what else he's painted this year.
Definitely.
And then there was one booth selling, they were recycled letter, like, light up letters from business signs, and they had painted different, like, you know, nerd stuff on the letters. It was a big K that had a K2SO painted on it, and there's a V with a pretty badass looking Vader painting on it. I was like, those you might need for the house at some point.
Oh no, I was fond of the Thundercats. It had to be the big T with the Thundercats across it. That's just blast from the past. It was fantastic.
I mean, what else are you going to paint on a T? Either that or, you know, Ninja Turtles or Mr. T. I mean, one of the...
I don't know. Ted's Great Adventure, you know?
Oh, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. There you go. Painting on the T.
That'd have to be a B, I think.
Not B&T. You get like, you know, an old BB&T sign.
There you go.
Oh. So, you know, has there anything you've learned so far that like, oh, I probably should have, as a newbie learning your first time, you're like, oh, I should do this next year?
Not that I've come up with so far. Maybe paid a little bit more attention to the schedule ahead of time. Prepared accordingly.
Yeah, so I was like, yeah, you got to show up for a panel at least an hour ahead of time, if not an hour and a half, depending on the panel. Because, like I said, or you're going to be walking out the door down the street to find the end of the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we talk about it anytime, you know, we're doing a con survival guide or anything else of that nature is, you know, try to prioritize the things that you would like to do versus the things that you absolutely must do, and then, you know, take from that about half of that amount of thing to compensate for lines, especially if it's a big celebrity panel. I know for you, you're looking forward to, you know, getting around to seeing Kevin Sorbo's panel.
Oh, yes, that has to be a thing. It's necessary. I may never go home.
May have to warn security about you for the Kevin Sorbo panel.
Don't you dare. It's supposed to be a surprise.
We have a runner.
Runner, streaker, we're not quite sure.
We have all the meats.
Well, that depends on how much we drink beforehand.
Sometimes you have to pregame the panels. Sorry, something just walked into the room and it caught my attention.
Yeah. Squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah, costumes at Dragon Con are always amusing.
I mean, and that's the thing, too, that, you know, coming into this con, and, you know, I'm sure later on tonight, as a lot of the parties kick off, the more popular cosplay characters will emerge, but, you know, I've kind of been surprised. I haven't seen as many Deadpools and Harleys this year, you know? It looks like Game of Thrones is,
Game of Thrones of stuff. I definitely think Rick and Morty is this year's like most common character.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, with the new season emerging and everything else, so I mean,
yeah, Game of Thrones and like not even like, you know, like the main people. Like, I haven't seen any Jon Snows yet, but I've seen like, you know, some of the. I've seen at least one Hodor and a couple Hagrids, and one Wilford Brimley, or it might just have been an old dude with a sweet mustache. I was not sure.
That's always, you know, the highlight of venturing over into the, you know, more alternate history track areas. And, you know, guys have dedicated their lives to some sweet stashes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there was it might be tonight, but there's a beard and mustache competition going on. We should go there and, you know, get some grooming tips. So is there any panels you're looking forward to seeing as we continue this weekend?
You know, so far this weekend, it's been all about, you know, business and just getting prepped for everything. So once we finish this recording, it's going to allow me to look at the schedule in a bit more detail. And
yeah, and Saturday we only have one, you know, podcasting thing scheduled. So like Saturday's going to be our big con shenanigan day. As far as me, like MC Chris, I always love seeing him when it comes down.
Oh, yeah.
Down.
I'm really looking forward to Psycho Stick, too.
Yes, I've never seen Psycho Stick live, and we've talked previously about being huge steampunk music fans, and, you know, Steam Powered Draft is playing, I believe, tonight. So, yeah, that's one I'm definitely looking forward to. And we'll probably have to, like, record an addendum at the end of the episode of, like, all right, now that we've made it through con, here's our final thoughts of what we've seen.
It's part one and part two of the epic series. It's the Iliad of the cigar nerds.
Well, as long as we're here in the kind of the mecca of geekdom, at least on the East Coast, let's kind of talk about the year in geek, like, you know, the movies that have come out so far, you know, the movies yet to come out that we're looking forward to. You see, we've got Spider-Man Homecoming came out this year, and that one for me was freaking amazing. I think they've finally gotten the character of Peter Parker and Spider-Man correct.
Yeah, it felt much more like what I always wanted from watching, you know, the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon series and stuff like that. Like, that's the version of Parker that I always, you know, had, you know, that you picked up from the comics and that type of thing that, you know, always kind of missed the mark, you know. I think, you know, so many of the previous films focus so much more on the emotional aspect of Peter Parker that the, you know, just being a kid, you know,
like,
and
the broodingness of, you know, every hero has to be like a dark brooding character. But yeah, you know, with this version of Spider-Man, you know, it's, he's having fun being Spider-Man. You know, he gets into some crap occasionally and has to learn to man up, and it's not like as wild and fun as he thinks it's going to be. But, you know, other than that, it's like, it's, like I said, other than not,
I mean, we can't all be a Nick Fury right off the rip, you know?
Other than not having the weird fantasy sequences that are in the cartoon series, it was pretty much like a live action version of Amazing Spider-Man. And the, like I said, Andrew Garfield, it's the whole package too. Like, Andrew Garfield was a great Spider-Man, but he was a crappy Peter Parker. He was like, way too cool to be Peter Parker's not supposed to be cool. He's a freaking nerd like the rest of us. He's only cool when he's Spider-Man. But this time they've got the good part of the correct Peter and, like, you know, the correct Spider-Man persona. So, yeah, I think that whole Sony letting Marvel have, or at least, you know, produce the character again has definitely been an improvement over the previous installments.
And I know, Amanda, like, you know, you've been introduced into the, you know, plethora of, you know, all things Marvel, as far as the movies. Do you have a particular movie or anything that really stands out for you so far?
Yes, I'm a late convert, I will admit it. Too much hashtag Boondocks, but I'm an Iron Man girl all the way. It's all Iron Man.
Casting.
Yeah, that would be good too.
I don't have to be Iron Man, I just want to be Tony Stark.
I could deal with that. That would not be a problem.
I mean, you just got to get your name on a tower. You'll be okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it works, you know, in the DCU. It works in the MCU.
Wayne Tower or Stark Tower, you're good to go. And that's one thing, too. You know, Iron Man being, yeah, he wasn't, it wasn't an Iron Man movie. You know, they used him just enough to make it cool and add to the storyline without, like, taking over the movie. It's not like, hey, here's an Iron Man movie, and guess what? We got Spider-Man. It was, they used it just enough. And it was, you know, yeah, his appearances were kind of vital to the storyline and, you know, and made sense in the story. It wasn't just like, hey, kids, look, we got Iron Man.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see, I'm trying to think. For me, probably the film that stood out, I don't know, kind of cliche, but, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, obviously way, way up there.
Yes.
You know, then you just so much of the Netflix, you know, Marvel mashups that we've gotten, you know, whether it's Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and even now, you know, with Netflix, the Defender series, you know, I'm enjoying it. Haven't completed it yet, but, you know, I mean,
yeah, I'm still working on that one, and then I gotta, you know, launch into the Tick series. I've been hearing good things about that.
Oh yeah, I know we talked about the trailer, you know, in a couple of episodes back for Nerd News, and you know, it looks like the episodes are living up to what we saw in the trailers, and you know, that's a huge step. You know, I mean, I remember back when Saturday morning cartoons were worth waking up for and everything, Tick was always a big part of that for me.
Spoon!
Amanda cringes.
No.
So,
the Tick is awesome and you're wrong.
No, you're wrong.
There's two types of people in the world. People who like the Tick and people who are wrong.
No. I'm sorry. Incorrect. Completely wrong.
So, Saturday morning cartoons, what would you say was worth getting you up out of bed early in the morning for?
I don't even want to admit this, but I'm going to anyway. Rescue Rangers, Tailspin.
You know what? I'm not going to, you know,
love some Tailspin.
Not knock that at all. I mean, I can.
Rescue.
I mean, I used to play the shit out of that game on
the
80s
cartoon sing-along.
Yeah, this weekend. I think we missed it, actually.
On NES, night. I remember. I played that game pretty religiously. I mean, just like any NES game, because you got three lives, and you're pretty well toast and starting back all over. But
and as a young man, Gadget was hot. I mean, that's probably what led most people to furryism was Gadget.
No, it was gummy bears that started it. And they went from there.
Oh. But, yeah, I mean, they've brought back DuckTales. I mean, yeah, that might be a, yeah, if DuckTales come back, you know, we might get some of the other Disney, you know, cartoons reimagined on Netflix, which I've heard good things about the new DuckTales. I haven't had a chance to watch any of it yet. There's, like, DuckTales, and, you know, they've mentioned kind of some
of the
other...
I mean, the only
other...
thing for me that... You know, watching some of these films is just the updated animation style and everything, because I'm so used to the hand-drawn grittiness of,
cell animation.
You know, cell animation, and now it's like, it's almost too polished. My brain doesn't know how to process it.
Wait, this stuff doesn't look crappy. So you, you go to Goodwill, you buy you a low-res TV, you know, and watch it that way. Yeah. try to, you know, make it just... Yeah, instead of 1080p,
just run it straight from the cable box. Go UHF all over again, you know, just to get the true coax cable experience.
And then you got to eat a bunch of sugary cereal to get that buzz going before you sit down to watch.
That was a key ingredient way back in the day.
Yeah, I think someone mentioned that they have mentioned in the new DuckTales series some of the other cities that the other cartoons were based in, so we may get a Darkwing Duck or a Rescue Rangers showing up at some point or getting their own series eventually.
Yeah, Darkwing Duck was always another fun one. It took Darkwing Duck a little bit to grow on me, but you know, once it did, I was kind of hook, line, and sinker.
I am the terror that flaps in the night. Oh,
I'll vouch for that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Dragon Con is always just, it's the nostalgia factor too. Cause I mean, there's so many people that, you know, there's a panel coming up with, I think Steve Bloom, was like the voice of pretty much every video game, every cartoon back in the day. I mean, if you were a Cowboy Bebop fan, he was the voice of Spike Spiegel, or most people may know, if you remember the old Toonami from Adult Swim, he was the voice of Tom, the little, like, spaceman robot host. So it's like, you know, him, you know, Rob Paulsen, like, all these, like, you know, guys that were the voices of our childhood are here, and you're like, oh my god, it's just, you become a kid again wandering the halls of this place, and then you're like, oh, I'm an adult, I can consume alcohol, too. So it's like, the best of both worlds.
All access pass to Recess Land.
Always loved Recess.
That was your best subject, wasn't it, Brad?
Didn't fail that one.
One of them. No, I was actually pretty good in school. I didn't fail too often. You know, my biggest thing was boredom. If I was bored, then, you know, I couldn't apply myself properly. But if it was something that I truly cared about, then I would, you know, give it my all.
And one you know, weird thing about Dragon Con is, like, I'm not sure the connection between nerds and cigars, but you know, would assume there'd be a couple cigar smokers here, but the amount of people that we've come across this, you know, weekend, it's like, you know, out back having a cigar over at the phone booth, it's like, you know, a larger than average amount of people that we've run into that are...
Well, I think there's a little bit of an age gap, too. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, seeing especially some of the, you know, younger folks. And, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe they're not even old enough to smoke cigars. But I know, you know, just perusing around in our shirts and people's like, cigar nerds, that's actually a thing? Like...
Are the few people that are like, hey, we've listened to y'all. We're like, sweet. Like, yeah, like I said, most of the time we were kind of recording in a vacuum, and it's, you know, dealing with our friends. But then you run into random people like, oh, cigar nerds, I've heard of you guys. You're like, sweet, there's people actually listening to this crap.
Watch it.
But yeah, and then people, random people, and it's like, I don't smoke a lot of cigars, but I had like a cigar like the other day, or you know, a couple weeks ago, and just you know, starting like random cigar conversations with people on the streets. It's been a fun time.
Well, I mean, I think that was the whole you know premise behind why we started the podcast in the first place, and you know the cigar is just more so, hey. Sit down, relax, and now that we got your attention and you're not focused on a million other distractions, what are you interested in? You know, and it's those conversations that allow, you know, the whole nerd aspect of things, you know, to come to fruition.
So what else have we had so far in 2017? Yeah, you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy. As much as I like the first one, the second one is like still like an amazing movie. I mean, usually sequels kind of, you know, the sophomore slump. But you know, with this one, it's come back and it's been. And that's one of the things I've got to try down this weekend is Michael Rooker is here. I want to go see one of his panels. I gotta look at the schedule once we get out of here and figure out when he's gonna be talking because I want to see him or you know go by the autograph room and check him out because. Freaking Yondu is just badass. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Yes.
Waiting for that, it. Knew it was coming.
I've seen a couple Rockets and a couple Star-Lords. I've not seen any Groots yet. Yeah, last year there was a lot of Groots roaming the halls. But I did see one thing in the dealer's room. There was like a toddler Groot. It would mount it on your shoulder, so it looked like he was like riding around on your shoulder, kind of like you were rocking. I'm like, I kind of want one of those just to wander around with a Groot.
That's awesome. I must have missed that one, but I mean, there's just so much to see that, you know, you'll be looking one direction, you'll miss 50 things for the 100 that you did see.
Yeah, and you're walking through a second time, you're like, oh, I didn't see that the first time I came through here. It's like, it's almost like sensory overload when you wander through there that yep, you almost have to like come back and check it again.
Yeah, I mean Dragon Con is truly it's like the movie that's so immersive and each time you watch it you see something new. And that's kinda how it is with Dragon Con. Like you can see the same person, the same costume 3 different times and you'll pick up on something different every single time.
Yeah, and once you start coming like year after year, you start recognizing people that are like oh, I've like yeah, talked to that dude or whatever. You know, it's almost like you know, you reconnect with your friends that are yeah, you know, mostly strangers that are like oh, that's that guy we had a beer with last year and whatnot.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a whole lot of subgroups for Dragon Con on Facebook, and you know, one of them is actually you know Con Connections, and you know, I've seen it, you know. Probably 100 times now where people, this is the one time of year that they get together and can actually hang out. You know, yeah, they're playing, you know, games online or, you know, communicating via Skype or, you know, exchanging text messages and stuff through the rest of the year. But, you know, this is the one time everybody gets to come together and, you know, just celebrate whatever, you know, their geekdom is.
Yeah, there's rarely any kind of drama thing. It's just like I said, it's you know people have said it all the time, but it's you know 80,000 of your closest friends.
Yeah, and I mean that's just what's so awesome. I mean I've talked to several different people that had been to you know the big San Diego Comic Cons, the New York Comic Cons, and they're like, you know, Dragon Con is such a unique animal of its own that you know even if you've been to big cons, you've never been to a con like this.
Nah, because it's all fan run, and you know we're San Diego and some of the other are big corporate events. Yeah, like even talking to some of the guests we've had and done interviews, you know, they're having fun here. They're not just like I'm getting paid to, but they're like yeah, oh yeah, I talked to these people or you know I've done these things and yeah, having you know conversations with you, just like. You know, any like your, you know, any one of their other friends, like, you know, telling stories and whatnot of their times at con. You know, it seems like, you know, everybody enjoys themselves here, even the guests.
Well, I mean, I think that's important. And too, you know, even if you're talking, you know, scientist or, you know, whatever the case is, then if you're putting on that panel, you're getting people that are, you know, either familiar with what you're doing or, you know, share a common interest or want to learn more. So, you know, that to me is, you know, kind of like when I'm talking to somebody that has, you know, brand new to cigars or whatever. And, you know, it's just, hey, there's a common interest and somebody wants a little bit of knowledge. So let me share some of my tips, my experience. And
yeah, this is like one of the things we saw last night that kind of we couldn't sleep and went outside and was just, you know, there on the balcony out front of our hotel room, just looking down at the lobby. And you know, last night was the Dragon Con wrestling night. And then someone would give a Ric Flair Yale, and then you'd hear like someone else like echo it like across the room. And then like someone like 10 floors up would, you know, it was just bouncing all around the hotel. And it's kind of amazing that like, you know, connection that everybody has here. You just kept bouncing around the hotel. It was hysterical.
Yeah, and that to me was, you know, Thursday night. Obviously, was the night of the wrestling event, but it was so cool seeing, you know, everybody, you know, that was dressed up, you know, whether they, you know, were members of groups that, you know, did, you know, sort of unsanctioned wrestling events, or, you know, what I would consider, you know, back when I was in high school, we would always call it kind of, you know, backyard wrestling, where you would have a group of guys that, you know, just out there with some tables, some chairs, and, you know, probably wasn't the safest of environments, but, you know, they made it work. They had fun doing it. You know, they would get, you know, 50, 100 people, and then they would, you know, hey, there's a little bit of a following, and then, you know, they would get some actual sponsors and get in, you know, more safe environments and that type of thing, and be like, hey, obviously you got some skill. Let's show you how you can hone in on that and do things this way as to prevent, you know, serious injury. You know, no more do you need to, you know, jump off the roof of the house or anything of that nature. As fun as it is to watch.
I understand you a whole lot better now, Brad. I get it. It's making sense to me.
Oh, and I saw a pretty sweet Randy Savage cosplay last night. It was like, oh my God, it's the Macho Man.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, Macho Man, Hulk, the Dudley Boys.
Then it's the random, like, people like cosplaying is just something they invented. It's not even like an actual character or anything. Or, you know, if I don't know what it is, I usually assume anime. I mean, don't know what it is, probably anime.
But I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of, you know, intricate costumes, you know, and stuff like that, that I'm like, I don't necessarily know what it is. So what do you go up to the person, ask, and, you know, strike up a conversation, and you know, they're sharing, you know, their geekdom, you know, in return, you're kind of sharing your geekdom. And I mean, that's part of that whole bonding at con that we talked about that just, you know, makes this such a unique convention.
Oh, so what else we got in the nerd geek year in review?
Well, I mean, we had King Kong come out. I mean, we've talked quite a bit about, you know, kaiju movies and that type of thing. So that was released on DVD. Let's see here. Kind of put me on the spot. And there's been so much that it's all running together. And you know what comes to mind? Nothing.
And we had Wonder Woman this year, which, I mean, that was a good movie. And, you know, hopefully marks a turnaround in the dark DC universe that we've had so far, because it was actually, you know, had its you know, its good action moments, but it, you know, and it had its lighthearted funny moments too, which is not something we've seen from any of the DC movies so far.
Yeah, I think they, you know, tried it a little bit, you know, with Suicide Squad, but, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, it's really hard to compare, you know, MCU with DCU, because the MCU is all about, you know, allowing, you know, the creators to have input and, you know, that type of thing, where the DCU is, you know, it's all about what the studio wants for the most part. And, you know, it's,
yeah, it's so distant when the writers of the source material are involved in the project, you know, versus a studio, yeah, that may or may not be familiar with the source material making the decisions.
Or, you know, even, you know, I mean, it's, I would go as far to say even care about the source material, you know, I mean.
Superheroes are making money, making a lot of movies, or movies are making a lot of money. We should try that.
Hey, guys, it worked over here. Let's you know, throw a cape on this person. And
Or, you know, another big one that came out this year was Logan, which, you know, was the first R-rated X-Men movie to come out. And that's another costume I've seen a couple of. You know, there's always a Wolverine walk around, but the old man Logan costume, I've seen a couple of those. I saw one of the Logan as the limo driver smoking a cigar with the claws, and I see another one of as like the beat up bloody Wolverine toward the end of the movie. So it's like, yeah, definitely seen a little bit of, yeah, everything of that movie. And like I said, it was almost had a very like Western feel to it. It definitely exists great as a standalone movie. It's not kind of fit into the previously established X-Men universe. It was definitely something new from them, which we've not seen a lot of.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I don't know. I really connected with that film, and, you know, for me, just, you know, seeing Logan as, you know, hey, I really don't want to, you know, involve this person and, you know, bring them into the fray because it's going to end badly. Control for the shit, Xavier. but, you know, he kind of, you know, has to, you know, sacrifice himself quite a bit and, you know, be like, you know what, look, you know, I can't just do it alone, and it's not fair to just, you know, not do anything. And
at the same time, Patrick Stewart playing Xavier for probably, yeah, his final time did an amazing job as playing just an old man Charles that has seen too much and done too much, and it almost became like a buddy cop film at moments, right? It's like, get told for the shit, Chuck. Oh, but yeah, that his like, you know, portrayal of a professor that's, you know, starting to, you know, is essentially dying is just, yeah, was amazing.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, too, I mean, you've always had the professor as that balance, you know, if somebody was going off the rail or the deep end, you know, the professor was there to reel them back in and, you know, hey, let's, you know, get you back to your foundation and your roots, and, you know, things aren't as bad as they seem. Whereas this one here, you know, the professor in so many ways with dementia, well, when he has an episode, you know, that costs people's lives, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, also Wolverine at this point is like seen too much and done too much, and he's ready to give up on life and give up on humanity, and he's like, you know, pretty much screw everybody else, I'm just trying to protect me and mine. And, you know, in, you know, Xavier, it was kind of Xavier's job to, you know, reinstill him his humanity and, you know, and caring, so he could, you know, try to, you know, bring forth the next generation of X-Men. Or even if he, you know, because I would have liked to seen him kind of as the Professor X role, but, you know, like the way he tells you know, X-23, he's like, you know, don't be, you know, you have the option of not being what I was, you know, you need to be better than me. And yeah, you know, kind of instilling that, you know, that wisdom into these future X-Men kids.
Yeah, that was just huge. And then, you know, let's see, I'm trying to think what else we had.
John Wick 2. Not necessarily nerdy, but freaking, that's a badass movie.
I mean, guns are nerdy. I mean,
definitely a gun nerd. I mean, that's the thing. There's so many different things at Dragon Con for whatever your, you know, particular interest is. I mean, I think I counted there's like 50 something tracks, but, you know, we're just down the hall from the armory. I mean, they have a room full of guns. So if you're, you know, even if you're not like a gun person, or, you know, a real life gun person like we are, you know, if you're playing Call, you know, one of those Call of Duty obsessed people, you're like, hey, I can actually go look at the real thing. I've been shooting people online.
Well, I mean, it's really kind of interesting, you know, because they showcase a lot of the history of guns. So you see the impractical and the, you know, up to the, you know, flawed up to, hey, this is, you know, actually really superior firepower.
I mean, there's like there's like a whole wall. It's just sniper rifles. I mean, there's like three Barrett 50s in there. I mean, it's nice. And then next door, they have like the medieval armory that's full of like swords and spears and armor. So it's, you know, if you're a historical nut, there's like the stuff for that thing. And then there's, you know, panels on, you know,
too bad there's not a 1,000-yard range.
Yeah, that needs to be the upgrade for the army. Or put it in like one of those fat simulators where you can like, where it's like the digital firearms training thing where you should shoot and snare. That'd be a cool addition to the armory for next year.
I think they have that. They call it Mech Warrior.
Oh yes, forget about Mech Warrior. That's one thing I need to do this weekend. We have not ventured over to the gaming hall yet, but that freaking Mech Warrior game. I just love that game. It's like the only place I can find it now. It used to be in like all the Dave and Buster's, and it's like the annual Dragon Con Mech Warrior tournament. This thing too, even if you're not here to watch panels or parties or anything, you freaking America's Mark's got gaming going 24/7. Yeah, well, 24/4. But yeah, I said you can go over there and enjoy whatever your game of choice, from classic video games to board games to RPGs to
whatever. That's the thing. We're actually rooming with a guy, and I mean, he was up till 3 o'clock this morning fine tuning some RPG mechanics for a game that he's invented himself, that he's going to be having groups of people play over the course of con and stuff like that.
And
so
if
I mean,
if more than gaming, there's panels on game design and stuff like that. So if you're someone who's always wanted to create your own game, there's panels to learn about that here. And then there's also like the Dragon Con charities, and we're down the hall from the blood drive, and I've just seen a ton of people kind of going through there for this weekend.
I gotta say, man, like Dragon Con, the blood drive, for they have the most badass t-shirts to hand out after your donation. Like, I mean, the shirts last year were awesome. This year's shirts are awesome. So I don't know. I should probably start donating, and
I may have to wander there and let them tap.
I collect my
shirts,
my badges and my ribbons. I need to start collecting, blood drive t-shirts.
The thing too, going through the digital, like, I'm a large dude, and finding cool nerdy t-shirts, like, you go to the mall and then, like, extra large about the biggest you might. But here's like, oh, that you can get that in up to a 5X. Sweet. You can find stuff
that
fit
are
here.
The people that are crafting their own stuff are like, hey, shoot me an email and I can custom make you something.
Yeah,
we
stock like general size stuff, but yeah, we do custom work. Here's our card. Call us after con and we can set you up with whatever. So it's like, and even if you're a cosplayer and then you may have a particular piece that you don't want to spend the time, of building it yourself, you can kind of complete your, you can almost purchase a whole cosplay outfit over there in the dealer's room. That's the thing, speaking of cosplay, that's always interesting, is the crossover stuff, where it's like, it's not just one thing, it's like a mixture of things. I think I've seen a Harley Quinn Batman, Batwoman, and I've seen, I just saw a Pickle Rick last night. That was with the battery rocket launcher. I was like, the stuff people build are just crazy.
And if you're not into building your own, cosplay, they have the actual replica, sets that you can buy, like complete Tony Stark or Captain America.
Yeah,
and
it was a full RoboCop and a full Iron Man suit down there. I mean, didn't have the $4,800 to buy the Iron Man suit, but it looked amazing.
Yes.
And then also you're like, if you want to be a stormtrooper, the 501st is here, the Mando Mercs are here. It's a good source to come and ask questions of people to assist in your own cosplay pursuits.
Yes.
So newbie, have you seen what's your next year's Dragon Con cosplay? Have you seen anything you're like, I need to build that now for next year?
Not so far yet, but I'm going a whole different direction. I'm old school 8-bitting it, so,
I mean, which I think that's awesome. Like, I don't know. It's kind of cool to see the people that are, you know, doing like Minecraft as their cosplay and stuff. And, you know, there'll be a group of them that, you know, I mean, I've seen in years past where, you know, the costumes of the individuals would, you know, go together to create, you know, a single, you know, image and stuff.
I saw one that was, what's the game?
The Temple of Doom thing?
No, with the NX7, Mass Effect. I saw a guy dressed as Lego Mass Effect, and he had, like, his armor suit was actually in shoulder pads were actually made out of Legos. So it's like his armor, you know, he's like, I'm Lego guy, but his armor and stuff was actually made out of Legos. So it wasn't just like, you know, a minifig head and like square body. It was like the regular Mass Effect armor, but made out of Legos, which is probably pretty heavy.
Yeah. I don't know. I've seen several costumes now where it's like, oh yeah, that required three handlers.
Yeah. And then the one guy with the pants made out of stuffed animals.
The 45 pounds worth of stuffed animals at the very... He had to have suspenders hold him up. I mean...
But if you fall, it's not going to hurt. He's got plenty of padding. That's a good drinking outfit. Because I've already fallen once, and it wasn't even due to alcohol. It's just like, you know, slippery tile rain walking out the back door. But, yeah, I managed not to break my phone, which was a success.
Yeah. Breaking phone equals broken camera. That equals
sadness.
Day at con.
Despair.
And yeah, you can buy a 10-foot charging cable.
Yeah, you forget your charging cable at home. I mean, you know, I thought I was going to have to go to Peachtree Center or somewhere, but no, I was perusing the vendor hall, and you know, actually, the cable is very well constructed and everything. So you know what? I'm going to consider that at $10. I can't go to Verizon or Walmart or anywhere else and buy that quality of a cable. So you know, I'm going to consider it a win-win.
Buy one, because I just thought like my charging cable for my PlayStation remote. I've only got maybe like a foot-long cable, so when the battery in the controller goes dead, I have to stop playing because I can't like stand a foot from the PlayStation. 10-foot cable, I can keep playing.
I mean, these are the times to try men's souls, my friend. I mean, if you're not doing it, then I mean, I don't know. You guys can hate on me and all you want, but you know, all I can say is I can stretch out across two beds, and I've still got phone cable to spare. So,
so
you know,
dramatic.
I don't have to huddle up in a corner and worry about, you know, unplugging my, you know, charger from the wall or anything else. So,
the struggle is real, ladies and gentlemen.
All else fails, you know, it might be, you know, something to add to my home defense, you know, repertoire, you know, I mean.
You can hide in the closet and make tripwire.
I mean, it could be tripwire. I mean, you know, garage. If I need to, you know, choke somebody out. I mean, you know, the possibilities are endless. I mean, these are the things that, you know, you were talking about your prepper panels and everything. These are the things that you would learn.
Improvised weaponry 101. Oh. So, you know. Let me see. What else have we got? You know, we've talked about what we've seen so far of 2017. What's coming up in the final, you know, 4 or 5 months? Or, yeah, however many months there's left in the year, it's too late in the day for math. You know, what haven't we seen or that you're looking forward to?
I think, you know, catching more of the concerts as a musician, that's always a big thing for me because I see instruments that I've never even heard of. I don't even know what it's called. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. I need to know what this is. So it forces me to go and, you know, search. And then I'm like, oh, that's, you know, hand carved and takes 1,000 hours to make. And it's really expensive. But man, it sounds so amazing by somebody that knows how to play it.
Like, I mean, like geek culture in general, not just Dragon Con, is the, you know, the stuff that hasn't come out yet that you're looking forward to seeing.
Star Wars everything?
Yeah, Star Wars, yeah, we still have at least one more Marvel release, and every trailer I've seen for Thor Ragnarok so far is looking like Guardians of the Galaxy-esque. It's very 80s sounding in the commercial, so that's one it's probably high up on my list. And Kingsman 2 is coming out pretty soon. Mm-hmm. That's another one that I'm like, on my must-watch list because, like, I love that first movie. Yeah, I'm surprised there's been, you know, no Kingsman cosplay running around.
I'm working on it for next year.
Well, I mean, staying in the, hotel where we're doing our recordings, like, we haven't had to, cross the block or cross multiple hotels. So there's been a lot of stuff that we probably haven't even exposed ourselves to yet. So
yeah, we got
to
go spend some time in the Marriott. That's like the
center of cosplay
culture.
You know, here in about 13 minutes, that's, that's what's going down.
Yeah, I'm going to go suit up in my Captain Hammer outfit, try my first cosplay of the weekend.
Wait, the first practice for tomorrow.
The first wasn't a drunken podcaster?
I mean, that's my everyday uniform. That's not even cosplay at this point.
It's a lifestyle choice. It's not cosplay.
It's not cosplay. It's a lifestyle choice.
Such is why. Cosplay.
Oh, that was the other thing that I saw that was amazing was Steampunk Ood.
Yes.
It was like, there's always like steampunk versions of regular steampunks and then steampunk versions of stuff, but yeah, there was a Ood from Doctor Who, and those like aliens have that weird, brain on a hose thing.
Yeah, they actually had the voice changer and everything. Yeah,
but his little brain was like, all like mechanized and stuff. It was like, it looked badass, and he was wearing a fez.
You can't go wrong with a sweet fez.
Yeah.
Just makes everything better.
Saw somebody with a Cthulhu, not only a Cthulhu mask, but it was like a crocheted Cthulhu mask walking around last night.
Yeah, that's always,
How'd that conversation go when you said, hey, Grandma, can you do this for me?
you're representing the Dark Elders, hey?
Oh, it's the old ones.
Sometimes you gotta go to the old ones to make your old ones costumes.
My grandma would look at it and be like, so you want an octopus?
No, Ma, it's a Cthulhu. Jeez.
Oh, God.
Eat your ham, Tina.
I'm completely creeped out now.
What's that weird dog thing? Oh, yeah, Chupacabra.
Oh. So, as we kind of wrap things up here, final thoughts on Dragon Con so far. Amanda.
Okay, well, we haven't hit any parties yet, so I haven't accumulated myself too far yet, so we'll see. But yeah, that's definitely what I'm looking forward to now. I want to party. It's time to party.
You've experienced panels, you've experienced the people watching, it's now time to join the party culture of Dragon Con.
Drink and smoke cigars and defile myself in every way, shape, and form.
And one thing that we always talk about is the food aspect of things. And I've got to say, like, maybe it's just luck of the draw or something, but so far, food and everything seems to be much easier to find this year than.
But then again, we've not, ventured into the food court yet, so we've not hit a long
delay yet. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. But, I mean, we've, had full meals where in the past, that was kind of, either I'm going to hit Papa John's for pizza slices or I'm going to hit, the food court. Like, now it's like, no, there's Jim and Nick's. There's these other places all set up in America's Mart. I don't know.
Maybe we just
didn't, venture forth, in years past enough. But
we failed in our foraging.
Maybe you're just too Strike Force to care this time.
That's the thing. Like, I've had a bag full of Strike Force always keep me going so far. So yeah, it's not let me down. And don't forget StrikeForceEnergy.com promo code Cigar Nerds for your con survival gear.
Just survival gear in general. Whether you want to, hike mountains.
Get through Monday.
Stay up late on Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
What? People sleep?
Eventually. All
right. And with that, we'll be right back.
First in line overnight girl, illogical. Now I like a girl in cosplay, London to LA. You got tight black pants and a mask on, such a mystery. You're the kind of girl who speaks my language, Klingon, Wookiee, Dothraki, Elvish, Gidalan, Nathari, Uriani. Will you
Talk Nerdy to Me. 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 You know the ocarina songs, minuet to forest. With this one, the force is strong. Dangerous like the Sith. Cooler than carbonite on New York to Hong Kong. All around the world, apparitions. You're my chosen one. You're the kind of girl who speaks my language. Now we're both in hot tears and dwarvish. You cool right, don't conky con. Will you talk nerdy to me?
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that we didn't drink enough of these at Dragon Con, but we got one more for you.
You know, honestly, I did not drink that much beer at Con. I was more into the whiskey and the pie and such.
Yeah, pie, whiskey, and rum, and then that horrible light tequila and Coke we accidentally got.
Oops.
Yeah, don't trust a Sheraton bartender. We ordered, Long Island iced teas. What we got was not Long Island iced tea. It was
anything but.
I think it was just a glass of tequila with Coke in it, because it was disgusting.
Yeah. But, you know what? I want to give props to the dude that showed up with the blue liquid and the backpack, because that was amazing. I'm not sure what, you know, concoction was the blue alcohol in said backpack, but it was delicious, and I was definitely drunk.
Yeah, that's a good thing about a steampunk party. You know, people's costumes actually dispense alcohol, so shout out to Q and the Mechanical Masquerade is always one of my favorite parties at Dragon Con. But yeah, somebody had a costume, had a backpack full of some kind of blue liquid that he was passing out shots at, and it was, I don't know, I tasted some peppermints in there. It was some kind of schnapps based, I think, but it was fairly good. It looked like we were drinking Windex, but it didn't taste like Windex, fortunately.
Maybe had similar effects. I don't know. I've never tried to drink Windex, so who knows? But, you know, back to the task at hand.
So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
So we've got Cigar City Brewing's Marshall Zolkov's Imperial Stout.
Yep. Dedicated
Russian
to
Imperial Stout.
Gregory Zolkov, one of the finest generals of World War II, in my bad Russian accent.
Yes. Terrible. Terrible. But,
it gets better the more vodka I drink. Or at least it does in my head. As long as Russia can make a career out of bad Russian accents, I think I can make it work.
Yeah, but he's got lots of cool guns. And
he's in jail now, so maybe I shouldn't go down that career path.
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, right off the bat, the thing that struck me is this thing, you know, pours just as Black of the Ace of Spades, and it's everything that you would want out of a Russian Imperial. I mean, it's
even like a Hershey's chocolate brown head on it. I mean, it is dark.
But, I mean, it's got chocolate, it's got molasses, it's got espresso, toffee, you know, just all around wonderful beer. And I didn't even look to see what the ABV on this was. I think 11.2%.
Yeah, it'll get you there.
Yeah.
And according to their website, it pairs well with mushrooms, Sri Lanka, dark chocolate, cherries, and ground wars in Russia.
So this is a, you know, a little bit of a, you know, special release, according to the website. But, you know, we've had, you know, several cigar brewing beers, and this is the first time I'm having one of their Russian Imperials. And, you know, I think there's a couple of different varieties of Russian Imperials. But
yeah, they have a cognac barrel age Marshall Zolkov, which that sounds pretty interesting. I haven't seen that. Yeah, I've drank a few of their you know,
I know
regular
I've,
release beers, like
I
a
know
Maduro.
I've had Maduro.
It's kind of a porter. It's pretty good. But this is the first of their special releases I've had. And that's good. Yeah, it definitely hits you with that coffee and chocolate. Like, that's like the primary thing you get up front.
Oh yeah, and you know, one of the things about this too is that the hops actually comes through on this. So you know, there's you know, kind of a you know, a little bit of a hoppy back end that lingers with this too. So yeah,
it's like a combination of like hoppy bitterness with like that dark chocolate bitterness at the end. It's
I mean, it works. I mean, it's subtle, but it definitely you know lingers there on the palate. But you know, just. You know, phenomenal here. I mean, I'm absolutely digging this thing, and you know, I'm sure by the end of this glass, I'll not remember what we smoked or you know this convention that we recently attended or anything else.
It's not DragonCon with like a little bit of alcohol-induced memory loss,
or maybe.
That's why you have to take so many photos so you remember what you did at Dragon Con.
Or maybe, you know, in the vortex of all things con, maybe it's you got to get back in that drunken mindset to, you
drunken
know,
recall
relive.
From
yes.
Beer Fest.
You know, who knows? I mean, it could be a thing. But, you know, as far as me, I don't do this often, but this bad boy here gets a solid 5.
Yeah, I'm on point with you there. Yeah, this is definitely, like I said, I've always loved an Imperial Stout, and especially now, since we're getting into the, starting to get a little bit cooler outside, it's definitely getting
stout weather. That's kind of the weird thing here in the Atlanta area, and, you know, we talked about this, you know, during, you know, our con speak, but the weather, you know, it just, you know, instantly turned, hey, I'm going from upper 90s to, hey, guys, here's you some low 70s. Enjoy. Like, it's been awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely the coolest Dragon Con that I remember recently. So, yeah, I mean, let's have another.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's a toast to you folks. We're going to finish this beer, and we'll be back with our... you know, interview science. With, you know, Sarah and learn
you
a
know,
little
Milkovich
bit.
Milkovich also kind of sounds Russian. So
yes, it works. Yeah. Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back to the show. It's time for science. And this week, you don't have to just listen to me. We have an actual scientist with us. Welcome, Dr. Sarah Milkovich of NASA and JPL. What is your official title there?
My official job title is Science Systems Engineer, which I am a scientist by training. I'm a planetary geologist, but I hang out with the engineers to do spacecraft operations.
All right. So, like I said, what kind of that does that entail in the operation of the spacecraft?
Yeah. So every spacecraft has a science team, an engineering team, and the engineering team's job is to keep the spacecraft happy and healthy, and the science team's job is to measure things with the spacecraft. And so these two things don't always go together. And they don't, so they don't have the same priorities, and they don't have the, even speak the same languages on some level. So my job is to bridge the two groups and to understand what the scientists are trying to do and go work with the engineers to try and implement that, and then go back to the scientists and explain, like, why within the engineering real world certain things can and can't be done, and work with them to try and come up with
find
a new way, and yeah, find the happy medium between the two, and also to have a sense of when can you push on the engineers to do something that's sort of outside the box of what the spacecraft was designed for. When is it worth pushing on things, and when is it, no, this is really just not a good time or way out of left field, and we just can't do it.
It's kind of like in the IT world, that people are like, we want a thing that does this, and then he's like, yeah, we can't make it do that.
Like, yeah, sometimes you just can't.
There's the dreamers
that.
And there's the guys that implement the dreams, and sometimes those two don't.
Absolutely. And then there's also scientists who are like, well, I don't care if I break the spacecraft. I really want this data. And you have to be like, no, life doesn't work that way.
We want the spacecraft back. Or
yeah, exactly. We want to keep it going.
We want to do more than one thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So right now y'all are working on the 2020 rover. Like,
yes.
What's like the primary, you know, because everyone's like, ooh, we're looking for aliens when you say life on Mars.
Right,
but
yeah.
What are we actually doing?
So 2020 builds on this decades-long exploration of Mars. We you know, sent rovers and orbiters to look for ancient, for water. And so, okay, we found evidence for ancient water. And then Curiosity went to go think about, was any place habitable, could have supported life? And so now 2020 is, can we find any evidence in the rocks that had to be formed by life? So from everything we've learned, we think the conditions on Mars 3.5 to 4.5 billion years ago were much more like Earth back then than the planets are compared to each other right now. So back then on Earth is when bacteria formed and life started and started evolving. And so that's really what we think would be most likely to find.
Some kind of microbial.
Yeah. Life. And so really what we're talking about is going and looking at 3.5 billion year old rocks on another planet, looking for evidence of bacteria, of microbes. So the evidence is going to be very, very subtle. And it's going to take us sort of a while to, we have to rule out that it could be formed by geology in some way and that it had to have been formed by biology. So it's a complicated question, basically.
Yeah, it's not going to be a quick experiment.
Yeah, we're not going to find dinosaur bones. We're not going to have something come up and like wave at the camera.
No
little green men.
No Marvin the
Martian. No creatures from Toy Story going, strangers from the outside. No, we're looking for little microscopic things.
Or they're just really good at playing hide and seek. It's like they're standing behind the rover the whole time.
Right, this whole time, all these decades of exploration, they've just been behind us.
So out of like all the experiments that are going to be going up, like, is there a certain one that you're most excited about, especially as a planetary geologist?
I'm actually, like, my job on the rover is how do all the science team, the instruments work together and then work with the engineers. So I feel like I'm not allowed to pick amongst my children and pick a favorite. We have some really awesome stuff, though. We have one instrument that we have a lot of lasers on this spacecraft, and I'm very fond of the fact that, so Curiosity sent one laser, and we're sending three, one of which is invisible. It's in the UV light to make organics glow. And so we've got lasers that we can shoot laser beams at rocks and look at the color of the spark that is burned off to figure out what the rock is made out of. And then we have another laser that'll make different minerals glow and things like
Suddenly
that.
Suddenly I feel like I'm in the wrong career field.
It's very awesome. And we also have, an instrument that is it's a precursor for human exploration. So if you saw The Martian,
yes,
and you saw how there was all that support equipment that was already there, one of those pieces of support equipment was what we call in-situ resource utilization, or ISRU, and it sucks in the carbon dioxide and creates oxygen out of that, because you need oxygen for the astronauts to breathe, and you need it to launch your spacecraft back home, to get your people home. So much oxygen is needed, we don't want to take it with us, we want to try and create it there.
Free up that resource and take more resources.
Absolutely. So we need to test it out on Mars before we ever need people to rely on it. So we have a little miniature version that sits on our rover, and occasionally throughout the mission we will stop and run it and see if it breaks in unusual ways, basically.
Sweet. Actually, that was one of the things we talked about, I think, on last week's science episode. So it's nice to hear someone who actually knows what they're talking about instead of explaining it from a Wikipedia article.
Yeah. Wikipedia is not always the most in-depth resource.
Yeah, I was like...
It's on the internet. It must be true.
It must be true.
Right?
Yeah.
My degree was in forensics. I'm like, yeah, science, space science. I'm like, I'm a fan, but I know nothing.
Right, but you have enough of a sense to tell when it's... You're like, that sounds... Not sure that that's the correct explanation.
Yeah, that sounds a little wonky.
That's a good.
Especially in the now that kind of science exploration has gone more into the private sector, you know, a lot of these people like Elon Musk are like, we're getting ready to build Mars colonies. What do you think is like the realistic timetable of an actual manned mission to Mars?
Well, the thing is that we don't have all the technology in place to send humans to Mars, let alone humans to Mars and getting back. So you can solve that in part with money. It's sort of a function of money and time. And we don't, to shorten the amount of time, you have to increase the amount of money. And so NASA's budget is a tiny fraction of what it was during the Apollo era. So the sooner to get humans to Mars, even like jointly with private industry, we either have to spend more money than we're spending now, or it's going to take many more decades out. If we're at, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize that NASA is actually one of the prime customers of the private spaceflight industry. Because I get a lot of questions about how do you feel about the private space folks? Aren't they stealing your thunder? It's like, no, we do the first cut and then they figure out how to make it profitable and yep. regular. And that's how it's supposed to work. We're really yeah. thrilled because they'll do stuff that we don't have to do it anymore.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's great. But they, a lot of those private teams, they've been focusing on solving a certain subset of the problems, the challenges. And so, but there's a lot more. I don't think they can do it on their own. I don't think we can do it on our own without a partnership with them.
Yes.
And given the amounts of money that's floating around, I think we probably have to do an international partnership.
Yeah,
as well.
I was watching a series the other day that was basically, you know, a group of physicists coming up with like 10 ways that the world could theoretically be destroyed. So it was like basically a 75 year time frame, and it was, you know, what would we need to accomplish to essentially be able to evacuate Earth if mm-hmm. there was a, you know.
Yeah, cause it's definitely, just get to something like we see in Star Trek, it's going to have to be a global thing, not just like one country or one company's thing. It's going to be one where, like, you know, it has to be just for the resources and alone. It's going to have to be everybody involved. But, you know, how did you get into science?
When I was little, I always loved a good story, and it was better if it was a true story. And so I loved reading about archaeology and history, like medieval history and prehistoric history. And I also loved, my family, when we would drive around, we'd like stop and look at road cuts on the freeway. We had these roadside geology books. And so we'd be driving from, I grew up in upstate New York, and we'd be driving to New Hampshire, and my parent, you know, we'd be looking out the window, being like, okay, North America, Africa, because that's where the ancient plates, you know, that part used to be Africa, and it split off. And, so I grew up in a house where all of this was kind of floating around me, and then somewhere along the way, I realized what geology is it's the history of the Earth in a different language with lots of bits missing. And so it's a puzzle and a mystery and a story all put together. And I just really loved that. And then I also watched, like, science specials on TV all the time, like Nova on PBS, and just thought that the people, like, that showed me the people behind the science. And I thought they seemed really cool. And I remember watching one of the specials about Voyager during, you know, it's the Neptune encounter, and just being like, wow, there's these people in a room, and they're looking at pictures of a place that's so far away. It takes light over an hour to get here from there. I want to be in the same room with those people. So I kind of keyed into planetary science, planetary geology, and space exploration very early on. A lot of folks who have jobs like mine, they kind of came to it later. They either went into research science, or different kinds of engineering, and then we're like, wow, with this background, I can do these things. So there's a lot of ways to do these.
I know there's, like, especially, there's a lot of talk about needing to get more young people into, like, STEM programs mm-hmm. and, you know, building our next generation of scientists. What do you think, like, the key to that, you know, like, how can, you know, we get more young people interested in science?
I think I have a 6-year-old son, and watching him and his friends, small children are naturally curious. They're natural scientists. They go out and, you know, and they, like, drop the cup on the floor 5 times, and it's like, oh, well, it's an experiment. Gravity still works, and mom still yells at you. So it's more that our educational system for teaching science and math at young ages needs a lot more support, a lot more, you know, the money to pay teachers, the equipment, to show that science really is a hands-on kind of thing and not a you sit and memorize facts. that science is a process for understanding the world around you. So I think valuing those careers and supporting those careers will then help, like, emphasize the value of science and engineering jobs as well.
And as we kind of wrap up here, what would you recommend to anyone who is listening who wants to get into planetary science and all?
As a career or for fun?
For both.
Okay.
Where do you recommend they, you know, path they head down? If the school system's not giving it to them on their own, like, you know, what's your recommendation?
There's a lot of fabulous programs at museums and planetariums and NASA has a huge outreach effort off of their websites to just bring everyone along. It's the, you know, we're funded by the taxpayer. We want everybody to follow along with us as we explore. There's a lot of stuff like that out there. Finding some sort of, I mean, I don't want to say there's no good teachers out there. There's still fabulous teachers, and many of them, you know, all of my teachers were fabulous, but we did a lot of, you know, going outside of the school setup and finding hands-on activities, you know, making like little experiments in your kitchen and that kind of stuff. There's also there's starting to be a lot of citizen science, just projects that are available online. Looking at features on Mars, you can request pictures, and one of the Mars cameras, HiRISE, will take the picture for you if you justify it well. I know there's citizen science for classifying nebulae and things like that. So there's a lot of cool little hands-on projects out there.
The internet is your resource. So as we finish, where can people follow what y'all are doing at NASA? What's your Twitters, your social, your Instagrams, all that stuff?
Well, many of the NASA centers have websites. There's a Twitter handle. A lot of the spacecraft have Twitter handles, like Mars Curiosity or Cassini Saturn. And then a lot of us individually, we have our own personal Twitter accounts that we talk a lot about our job. So mine is Milkysaw, M-I-L-K-Y-S-A. And I tweet kind of randomly either about my job or cool rocks or, you know, complimenting somebody's dog pictures. So it's kind of, you see the full gamut of our lives on there. But the NASA centers have, especially JPL, with each of the spacecraft, they do have a lot of different Twitter accounts out there.
Oh, yeah. Some of the JPL stuff. There's some interesting Instagrams and Twitters. It's like, it's not, you think, like, stuffy scientists, and then you see them, and there's guys with mohawks.
Bobek. Yeah. I know Bobek. And, that's the nice thing. JPL feels a little bit like a research, you know, a federal facility, but also a bit like a college campus. So people will wear their good Hawaiian shirts for reviews and things like that.
All right. With that, we'll be right back. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun.
We've actually learned some stuff this week instead of just me rambling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the podcast. Today we have a special guest. We're sitting here with prolific sci-fi fantasy author Kevin J. Anderson. Welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not that prolific. It's only 5 or 6 books a year. What else do I do with my spare time?
Yeah, it's getting up there.
It's like 3 numbers. Books a year. Come on. So,
as a writer, where do you find your inspiration for your characters, especially your original characters?
Well, I mean, one of the cliched questions that writers always get asked is, like, where do you get your ideas? And I got asked that so many times that I finally came up with my snide response of, well, how do the rest of you stop them from coming? I got to write so fast just to get them out of my head. It's sort of the way my brain works. I mean, every time I watch the news or I read a science magazine or I'm out, I live in Colorado, so I'm out in the mountains hiking or something, and I'll go, oh, well, that could be a story, or what would happen if we did this differently, or you just look at things and then make up stories after that. And, you know, I have a series about a zombie private detective, which is sort of in a world where all the monsters are back, and he solves crimes with werewolves and mummies and ghosts, and I'm here at Dragon Con right now, and I've been to Dragon Con, I think, 24 years, and it's this mobs of people and cosplay and everything else. And so I thought, how about we just turn have one of these conventions in the monster part of town so that you've got all like real werewolves going to a convention where there are people cosplaying them. And well, the werewolves would then be cosplaying like Cylons or something else, and it would just be completely different. And so then that turned itself into a mystery where I've got, his name is Dan Shamble, zombie PI. So he's solving the murder of a 501st stormtrooper, and the only witness is a Klingon in a convention that's filled with monsters. What could possibly go wrong?
It was a guy in a costume. That's going to narrow it down.
Yes.
Speaking of your zombie PI, you told us about a werewolf cigar lounge in one of your books. Yeah, how do you choose werewolf as the perfect cigar smoker? Is it because of the beards?
Well, the fumes sort of cling to all the fur that they have going on, and the it's a scene. It's just a smoking lounge where it's an airlocked thing, so they can sit in there and they can smoke, and the smoke gets so thick that nobody notices for hours that all the werewolves have mysteriously vanished, and they just find the half smoked cigars sitting there in the ashtrays when they come in. But it was just kind of a cute. Because I've one of the people who works for us is a big cigar guy, and he often goes into the cigar lounges.
I've been in a few that probably looks like that, where you couldn't tell if someone went missing.
I mean, it's just that's the least ridiculous part of the story is what kind of the funny part is. So, it's just you try to add the details that you use in your real life and then exaggerate them a little bit so that they can be fun in a story. And that's a novel I've just finished, and we're going to publish it probably in November, called Tastes Like Chicken.
Nice. Awesome. Pick that one up. You've worked in a lot of like different universe. You've worked in the DC universe, Star Wars, Dune. Is there a particular favorite sandbox you have to play in out of all the different universes and characters you've written for?
Well, I kind of grew up as this geeky fanboy, and I lived in a small town in Wisconsin. I was like thick glasses and bad haircut and no girlfriend, reading comics all the time and reading science fiction books. And I saw Star Wars when it was in the theater in the first run in 77 or 78. And so getting to write in Star Wars was this, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then getting to write Batman stories was amazing, and Superman. And Dune, though, was always my favorite science fiction book. I read it a dozen times, and each time I get it something different out of it. And being able to work with Frank Herbert's son and using Frank Herbert's original notes has been one of the coolest experiences of all of it. Navigators of Dune and Tales of Dune just came out this couple of weeks ago. So I'm still doing those, and I'm really enjoying those, and I write my own original stuff. Like I said, you got to write really fast to get the ideas out of your head, so there's room for more of them to pop in there.
And to get the rest of the Star Wars questions out of the way, because you know those have to come. As they're kind of rebooting the expanded universe, you create a lot of characters in the old expanded universe. If you got a chance to reintroduce anybody, is there anything you would do differently with the characters you created?
You need to start over from scratch and just do it.
Yeah, if you brought back Kip Duran, Admiral Dahl, some of that, is there anything you would change with the characters you've already created, or would you keep them the same?
You know, I'd probably keep them the same, because those were the stories that I told, and those were the characters that were in there. And I was just so immersed in Star Wars at the time. I mean, this is all day long, the movies playing constantly, and I had all the versions of the soundtrack playing while I'm writing, and all my Boba Fett action figures to play with when I needed inspiration. And I built my own Millennium Falcon model just so that I could tell where all the little pieces in the cockpit and the seats and everything were. And, you know, this is all research. It's important that you do your research right. Mm-hmm. But at the time that I wrote mine, Timothy Zahn and I were among the very first people doing those. And so we had the movies, and there were some gaming RPG books that we could read the backgrounds on. But everything else was just, we had to make it up. And now if somebody's starting it, they've got mountains and mountains of stuff to work on, all of which is now legends instead of the, let's be clear about this. They didn't throw everything out. They just said they don't have to take everything into account.
Yeah, they're so they just don't, starting fresh, because at
but
some point
But they might
that,
be, I guess they're bringing Thrawn back in, and they've used little bits and pieces. Of things in the Clone Wars cartoons, which are the new canon, I guess. There's some things in Rebels that have been around in some of the other books and stories that I've done. So they're able to use it, but they're creating their own thing. And you know, a lot of the Star Wars readers, there's a lot of Star Wars readers.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot more Star Wars fans who didn't necessarily read all the books. And so when they're rebooting and doing Episode 7, you can understand that they didn't want to start from a point where they had to take into account 230 books and all the gaming books and comics.
Yeah, there
and
would have been a
else.
Lot of history they had to work in there that most people would have no clue
well,
of.
And let's face it, all of the really big and really obvious ideas have already been done. Like in my Jedi Academy books, it's Luke's trying to train new Jedi Knights. Well, that's an obvious thing you would want to do for the movies, which we assume that's what the next movie will be at least partially about. So you can't just say, we're going to keep all this other stuff and not be able to use it in the movies. And this way I get to go see it as a true Star Wars fan and sit in the theater and go, I wonder what's going to happen because I don't know. I wonder if everybody in Rogue One are going to live. You know, you never know.
Probably not. Yeah, that was one of my biggest complaints about The Force Awakens. I'm like, you know, I read the Jedi Academy trailer. It should be like a whole like team of Jedi Knights now. It's still just Luke. I was like, what has he been doing for 30 years? He's pulling a Yoda.
We may find out that he's really screwed up with some of those students. We don't know. Kylo Ren doesn't seem to have turned out all that well. So.
No, yeah, that's probably went bad. Any questions, Brad?
Yeah, so, I mean, you've done stuff, you know, just getting outside of, you know, the books and that type of, you know, I'm a musician, so, mm-hmm. you know, the stuff that, you know, obviously when I learned about you working with Rush and everything else on, you know, some of their concept album just, you know, kind of boggled my mind, you know, so that was...
That's some of my favorite work of all. It's called Clockwork Angels, which is the name of the most recent Rush album, a steampunk fantasy concept album about a young man basically torn between, well, the forces of good and evil. It's the Watchmaker, who's kind of like a big brother that wants everybody to run on time and be in their place, and then the Anarchist, who wants to destroy any kind of constraints and civilization and schedules and things. And it's airships and pirates and lost cities and steampunk carnivals and so
everything
working with,
we would love to see in the yes. alternate history.
Oh
track.
Yeah, we're big,
well, Neil Peart, yeah, Neil Peart, the drummer from Rush, who writes all the lyrics for it. Has been a friend of mine for close to 30 years now. And we've done a story together, and he's written the introduction to one of my short story collections. And he approached me when he was developing this whole idea, that he kept asking steampunk questions and story questions and was writing the songs that tell the story, kind of like Pink Floyd's The Wall and stuff like that. And he asked me to write the actual novel version of it to flesh out everything. And so then we brainstormed all of it, and Clockwork Angels just loved it. It turned out everything that I wanted it to be, and then we did a sequel called Clockwork Lives, which I think is even better. We've got the comic version of Clockwork Angels. Yeah, you got to read those. And now I can listen to the album and just go, I know that song, and they know that character, and just, you know, to me that was what the cool thing is.
So it just brings a whole new dynamic, you know, just having, you know, both the media, you know.
Well, we did a graphic novel of it, too. Yeah. So there's the comic version, the album version, the novel version. If anybody's listening, the movie version, please, somebody make that.
Yes, do it.
Well, I mean, that's what you have to – I get people writing me saying, why don't you let them make movies out of your books? Yeah, I'm turning down offers every day, right? you don't let somebody – you do let them make the movie, but somebody's got to come and make you an offer, and they got to have a studio, they got to have actors, they got to have script writers, they got to have directors. And you know, when I write a book, it's me writing the book, and I turn it into the publisher, or I publish it myself. If it's somebody who wants to make a movie, this is like putting together the U.S. Army. I mean, everything comes together, and you're throwing, even for an average movie, you're throwing $100 million at it. And again, if you have $100 million, we can help you make the movie, I'm sure. So you just got to get the right kind of interest. And you know, the way things go is that one thing will happen. They'll make one movie out of your stuff, and then everybody wants everything you've had because they don't want to think about anything else. They just want, oh, it's Kevin's stuff. Let's buy all of it. I'm going, yes, please, buy
yes,
all of it.
Do that.
And if you make 100 of them, maybe one or two will be good, and that'll be fine.
Ed, you know, you started off in technical writing. Yeah, how'd you make that jump from scientific to the sci-fi?
Yeah, well, I worked for 13 years as a tech writer for a big research lab, which meant that I wrote exciting volumes of respirator safety manuals and how to handle explosives without blowing yourselves up and stuff like that. But that was wasn't really where I started out. I've been writing stories since I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old. It was just trying to get them published and making a living at it. Uh-huh. So I wanted to make a living as a writer. And so my tech writing job was like, it paid the bills while I was writing my novels in the evening. And, because selling novels doesn't make all that much money, but writing respirator safety manuals gives you your health benefits and vacation and retirement.
Do you have any advice to young writers that are wanting to start off and get in, get to where you're at eventually?
Well, don't quit your day job. Well, that is actually a good one. You find a decent job that doesn't trash you too much, and you keep your job because publishers don't always pay on time, and the mortgage likes to be paid on time, and the electric bill likes to be paid on time. So if you can find some way to pay the bills that you don't hate, and then spend, you can, if you work your time, you can write an, if you write one page a day, so you do your regular job, come home, you write one page, you'll have a novel done in a year. And writing a novel a year is perfectly acceptable. I was obsessive. I mean, even when I worked full-time, I would write in the evenings, I'd write in the weekends, and, you know, you don't have a life, but that is your life. That's what you do. The other thing is you got to read a lot. You have to get to know the business, and the business is really a moving target now. It changes like crazy, and the writing and publishing business now is utterly different from what it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Especially with the self-publishing,
well, and everything self-publishing becoming,
and internet publishing.
E-books, and you can do your own audiobooks now, and you can do your own comics. I mean, everything is more of a do-it-yourself thing, and if you don't know any of that stuff and you just want to mail your manuscript in to Bantam Books or something like that, I mean, you got years and years ahead of you before anything gets accepted and published, and you know, most people don't become successful with their first book. And I mean, I wasn't. I had like 11 books out before my first bestseller, and that was when Star Wars came out. So it's, nobody ever said it was an easy job. It's like, what's the shortcut to becoming a gold medal winning Olympic athlete?
Well, steroids.
You start when you're a real or steroids, right? You start when you're a little kid and you work like crazy and practice and practice, and you might win a semi-finalist championship or a regional thing, and you might work your way up, but not everybody who wants to be an Olympic athlete gets to become one.
Yeah, if you want to be a writer, you just have to write and keep doing it, and yeah, hopefully success will come eventually, but it's like any other job or career, you have to keep working at it and not quit.
Let the podcast note that Kevin was nodding so you couldn't hear any of that.
And with that, we'll wrap this up. Where can people, you know, follow you, find your books, find what you're doing currently?
Cool. My website is wordfire.com, word like words on fire, wordfire.com. And if you sign up for a mailing list, you get an instant download of one of my Dan Chambell short stories. It's right there. And I'm on Twitter as the word the with my initials, KJA. So the KJA. On Facebook, just look for, it's the official Kevin J. Anderson page. And I post, I mean, I'm not one of these people that goes on social media and every posting is, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. It's, I post cute cat pictures, and I do a lot of mountain climbing. I
well
post
rounded.
All my hiking pictures, and some writing advice I put up there, and recipes, you know, whatever to-do things is.
All right, well, we appreciate your time. Thank you for sitting down with us.
All right.
And have the good con.
Thanks. Like Pink Floyd says, have a cigar.
Exactly. And welcome back. So now we got a little, as we're wrapping up this episode, kind of give our final thoughts on Dragon Con, the highlights and whatnot. And also, you know, as we kind of wrap this up, got any final thoughts on this cigar as we're working into the final third?
Yeah. In fact, I'm trying to get a little bit of a relight here. You always seem to catch me at that pivotal moment in time. You know, you would think in between segments I would have this stuff taken care of, but that would just be way too professional.
Yeah, I mean, it's the strength and the complexity of has kind of lasted throughout. It's a damn good smoke. I think it's the first Southern Draw I've had, and it actually pairs pretty well with this Marshall Zukov beer.
Yeah, and you know, very much to your point, the strength and intensity and wow. Hey, the beer's done its thing. The strength and intensity, there we go. Let's you know, get back into speaking mode here, has remained throughout the cigar. You know, it hasn't let up. It's, you know, been wonderful, though, because it's not, you know, it's definitely a blast to the taste buds, but it's not so much so that it's like, oh my God, kill me now. You know, this isn't some of the challenge cigars that we've, you know, unfortunately have, you know, endured. And, you know, this,
yeah,
it's got such a complexity that even though the strength is there and you can't, you know, dismiss it, your taste buds are just like, wow, what is this flavor? And what is that note? And, you know, I mean, I just find my mouth and my, you know, taste buds just like, you know, it's like a flavor bomb going off.
Yeah, it's definitely been strong enough to keep my attention, but not overpowering where I'm like, I need like fresh air after I'm done smoking this. I mean, it's very well balanced with the strength and the flavors.
Yeah, and you know, a shout out too on the construction. I mean, you know, this is very well constructed. I don't see any obvious, you know, tobacco veins. I mean, it's, you know, maintained a very good, you know, consistent burn. You know, my problem when we're recording the podcast is we get on these talking tangents and in not trying to forget what I want to say, I forget to pick the cigar up. You know, so when you're hearing me talk about relights, it's nothing to do with cigar construction or, you know, humidity. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I got cigars, I got beers, I got microphones, I've got audio equipment and levels, and it's so
I,
like,
I can talk and smoke at the same time. It's like that. It's like natural. I just don't put the cigar down. Well, and see, when you're talking, I puff.
You know, I mean, I guess that's an interesting cigar nerd dynamic. There's a little bit of a B-reel for you, I guess.
You know, now that we've had, you know, approximately a week to decompress, you know, con highlights for you. You know,
I think for me, one of the cool things, and, you know, maybe we'll upload the video or something to our YouTube page, but we were in a Rob Paulson panel, and he actually did, you know, the whole Yakko's history thing. And, you know, hearing him do that from start to finish, and then come to find out there's even an extended version that he also did was just awesome.
And that song is so complicated because he names like every country in the world. And, you know, I didn't see him like looking at notes or anything else. No, he just like remembered. And that's something he probably recorded, I don't know how many years ago that Animaniacs was on. But then again, people requested every con he appears at. So he's
and that's kind of how this went down. Is so a fan's like, hey, I know every word. And he's like, great, let's do it. You know, so, you know, the fan drops out after about, you know, 50, 60 seconds and, you know, stumbles over his words. And, you know, Rob just keeps going through like, you know, I almost want to give him a rap god beat or something, you know,
Because through his whole panel, he just like dropping into like the different voices. I mean, because it's a guy who's been everything from a Ninja Turtle to, you know, an Animaniac and continues to. And what was nice to talking to him or, you know, listening to him, it's not just a job, it's like a passion for him. He really enjoys bringing these characters to life.
Well, I mean, I think that was kind of the general takeaway that everybody that we interviewed and interacted with on a, you know, professional or a guest level said is, you know, how blessed they felt to be able to do something that they loved and, you know, figured out how to make money at. Like, I mean, that's the...
I mean, even speaking to Kevin Anderson, he's written so many books. I mean, before the mics even turned on, he's like, oh, you guys are the cigar nerds. Let me tell you the story about this character I created that smoked cigars and this like cigar smoking scene I had in one of my books. I mean, I had to get him to retell that story when we were during the interview because I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I've got to get this on tape. And like I said, everyone we interviewed was, you know, super nice and had a lot of interesting stuff to say and legitimately enjoyed coming to Dragon Con. And then, like, you know, normally with our podcasting schedule, we may not be able to get to all the panels we want to, but the panels we did get to, like the Rooker panel. I mean,
oh yeah, you know, with his amazing opening line is, you know, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. And then, you know, immediately after that, jumps off stage and just starts running through, you know, the audience and, you know, taking questions and, you know.
Yeah, he didn't sit down really to, like, the whole panel. Like, he just kept going around, you know, getting people to ask him questions and generally, like, just, you know, giving people shit. It was, and also, you know, I'm a huge gun guy. Like, and the first thing he says is, like, I got a new Glock, y'all. Like, like, yes. Had to show us pictures of his brand new Glock 34 that someone had given him. That was a Yondu edition Glock. So it was like, oh, I mean, I wanted to make it to the Guardians of Galaxy panel, but we couldn't get into that when it was full up. But going back for the solo panel with just him was so worth it. I mean, he was very entertaining. If you get an opportunity to see him at a con, definitely go check him out. And then, you know, MC Chris, first time he's been back in a while. I got to see the MC Chris concert. That was,
yeah, and it was cool, too, because he did a lot of stuff that he doesn't typically do, you know, through his, you know, tour sets, you know. So, I mean, you got to hear, you know, some of the more obscure stuff that's out there. And, you know, the MC Chris is always a blast. So, yeah.
And then we had our very own Stan Lee cameo. It was just like we were in a Marvel movie because we were walking through the dealer's hall. And here comes two cops down the aisle with like an entourage of people behind them. They're like, you know, move to the side, move to the side. And we're like, all right, whatever. And then all of a sudden Stan comes scooting by on his Rascal. And it's like, holy shit, it's Stan Lee.
And it was cool too because, I mean, we were, you know, on the outskirts. So literally it is just us three on this hallway. So it's not like there was an entire, you know, packed area, you know. So yeah. It just, you know, truly was, you know, right time, right place. And, you know, that was absolutely a highlight.
Yeah, and the, you know, the according to the post-con press releases, it was another record-breaking year for attendance. Yeah, I think it was like something over 80,000.
I think it was like 82,000 is.
Yeah, and it didn't seem that crowded. I mean, the, you know, props to the security and the staff for keeping the lines wrangled. I mean, even walking through, I mean, other than walking through that, you know, the Marriott horde that's always there, I mean, it didn't seem that crowded, you know, just out roaming the streets.
Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, a much better job was done at displacing people and dispersing them. And, you know, this year there were, you know, panel lines that were formed, you know, in areas that in the past had, you know, not really been utilized for con space or nothing to an official capacity. You know, yeah. There would always be, you know, some photographers and, you know, some cosplayers and stuff like that, but never, hey, we're going to start forming lines or, you know, getting panels to exit this way. And, you know, I think it really helped, you know, the flow of traffic and dispersing of people. So it wasn't just, hey, we're all sardines and,
Yeah, and the people too we ran into. I mean, when we were in the Rooker line, we met a couple in front of us that they brought like a cooler full of beer, and we pretty much tailgated the Rooker panel out there, you know, having drinks in the line out on Peachtree Street and the general good time.
You know, that's kind of the comment as I, you know, now that con is wrapped up and, you know, if you look at any of the social media, obviously the negative stuff for some reason always outweighs the positive. So for every 100, you know, negative things, you only hear about 3 or 4 of the positives. But, you know, people were complaining about the long lines and stuff like that, which, all right, I get to some extent, but it is con. It's to be expected. But, I mean, at the same time, like, the lines are where I have, you know, so much fun and so much interaction because yeah. You're surrounded by people and, you know, you're passing around, you know, whatever your, you know, liquid poison happens to be, and, you know, you're sampling and you're passing around the crud. And I mean, it's, to me, that's a lot of what con is, you know, just a big social interaction of, you know, people from all different geekdoms and fandoms, you know, that you all come together under one common, you know, thing that, hey, we're here to celebrate being a geek, a nerd, and,
yeah, and just the – and even with the long lines, like, you know, I never failed to get into a panel I was trying to get into if I showed up early enough.
Well, I mean, and even then, like, kind of the thing is
– I think I said at one point, it's like people were talking about people bitching online. I'm like, you know, the people that are out having a good time aren't posting online because they're out having a good time. It's just a few malcontents. So it's like – I definitely think that was like a vocal minority, the few complaints.
Yeah. And I mean, there were some, you know, I mean, there are legitimate issues that, you know, need to be worked on and addressed. But I mean, I tell people all the time that, you know, just hear the news and, oh my God, a chair was thrown over a balcony and somebody's in an ER. And I said, well, you look at any major sporting event or something like that and tell me that there isn't a fight or there isn't, you know, some sort of thing that goes down. And then, you know, a lot of the stuff that you hear about, you know, once you talk to members of security or, you know, once the initial hype has died, you realize, oh yeah, that person didn't even have a con badge or whatever. So, you know, that's just a guest in a hotel that, you know, obviously.
And there's always the few people that, you know, go too hard, too fast and have, like, you know, heat exhaustion or something like that. And when we were in line for the Star Wars panel, there was somebody that like passed out, but security and medical staff were like right there on, you know.
Yeah. I think it was in a matter of, 15, 20 seconds and they had people, you know, dispersed, the area cleared and already rendering
water,
aid.
Having, medical units on the way. I mean, it was, everything looked like it was handled, you know, with efficiency. And that was the other thing, too, like Peter May, going to the Peter Mayhew panel. That's like the first time I'd seen him at Con.
You don't realize how big of a man he really is. Dude.
I mean, it was him and, how was it? I can't remember the kid's name who played Boba
Daniel,
Fett.
Is it Daniel Logan, maybe?
I think so. But yeah, that kid talks 90 miles. Well, kid, he's like 30 now. But at one point, Peter just reaches up and puts his hand like all the way around his head nearly. I'm like, that is a big dude.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was Daniel Logan, so.
Like I said, the panels that we got in were amazing. And like I said, the people we interviewed were all super cool.
And you know, one of the things that, you know, and we've even done an episode on, you know, just kind of nerd music or steampunk music and that type of thing is, you know, this year there seemed to be, or, you know, maybe it was the first year that I really paid attention and, you know, had, you know, an inkling to keep my eyes open. But I got introduced to so many new bands this year.
The one we went to, Marquise of Vaudeville.
Marquise of Vaudeville, like Crystal Bright.
It was like a steampunk, like, rock band. I mean, it was very, like, you know, old school rock and roll, but it was good. And I wanted to see Steam Powered Giraffe, but it was like 2 a.m. before they went on stage. It was like, I can't do it anymore. And we end up partying, having too much fun at the Mechanical Masquerade and missed out on Psycho Stick. But, you know, we got to talk to them, you know, at their booth beforehand. And like I said, super nice guys, too. I mean, it was, like I said, all the musical guests were great this year.
Yep. So, you know, that to me was truly a highlight. You know, and just, you know, that's the beauty of Con is you get exposed to so much more than just, you know, the cosplay and, you know, the people watching aspect of things. And, you know, I mean, it is, you know, my favorite convention because it is a convention unlike any other. And, you know, people that try to compare it to San Diego and New York, it's like, it's not that at all because it's so much more personalized.
Yeah, I mean, those are more corporate-run events where this is, you know, truly a fan-run convention. And also, you know, normally, I mean, I've cosplayed a time or two, but I never really go big on cosplay. But, I mean, this year we did, like, a big group costume. We were, you know, Mario, Luigi, and Princess Peach. And had a blast. There's so many people stopped us, like, oh my God, let me get a photo. Even other Marios were like, dude, like, we need to, like, group shots.
I mean, it was cool. I was in my Luigi outfit and I got approached of, you know, one of the Ricks of the 500 Ricks that was, you know, having a little bit of trouble with a cigar. So, you know, sat down and, you know, actually struck up a conversation, you know? I mean,
yeah. And when we were outside smoking at the Hyatt pool, there was a guy come up, started asking about cigars, and I'll probably talk to him nearly an hour about cigars.
I mean,
that's
you know, the beauty of Con is, you know, there's all walks of life, and you know, at that time and at that place, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's a single unified body of like-minded people, and you know, it's not an experience that is easily described, you know, without people experiencing it firsthand.
Yeah, and running it, we you know, finally got to meet up with the Drinking Bros Nerds group and participated in their photo shoot, and you know, knowing most of those guys on, you know, from a chat room online, you know, it's kind of cool to meet those people in person, and even got to meet Mary from Range 15. I mean,
that was a freaking awesome highlight. Yes.
I was like, oh shit, it's Mary. but yeah, I mean, it was a great time. So Do you have a particular favorite costume you saw this year?
You know what? It's going to sound sort of like a cop-out, I guess, but, you know, for me, you know, and we talked about it a little bit when we were doing the official ESO recording, but, dude, I just absolutely fucking love the, you know, T-Rex costumes. And, you know, probably the coolest one is...
I mean, they've evolved
to
the point where they're cosplaying.
Yes.
With T-Rex as something.
Yeah, oh, I saw T-Rex Deadpools, T-Rex Bowsers. You know, the probably the most humorous one that I saw was, you know, a T-Rex with the metal grappy arm things that, yeah, you know, had a T-shirt that says, "I'm unstoppable," you know, since he had the longer arms now, so... Oh,
I think for me there was the... was it the... I saw... Because I'm a huge fan of NCIS, and there was a dead on Abby. I mean, it like for the, I mean, I even saw online some people posting pictures of her and going like, "Is this the real Abby showed up to con?" Because I mean, she was like perfect. And then I think it was,
and
like,
Miami Vice too was, you know, I mean, I
oh yeah, the was it there was a one I saw, there was a dead on Magnum PI. And then we also ran into a Burt Reynolds, a bandit. I mean, he had the full bandit jacket, hat. He was even carrying around like a 12-pack of Coors.
Yes.
I was like, holy shit. And I think the one I think it was at the MC Chris concert, we saw a Powdered Toast Man from Ren and Stimpy. And that was the one that, you know, Amanda was like, "Oh my God, Powdered Toast Man."
Yes.
So yeah, it's like, I mean, I definitely think, like I said, we always talk about the you know, there's the costume of the con. There's like the one costume that is like, there's a ton of every year.
And Rick and Morty, hands down.
Yeah, like I said, we don't count Deadpool because there's always a million Deadpools and a million Harley Quinns. But I think this year, it was definitely the year of Rick and Morty. I mean, there were so many different versions of Rick. I saw at least four different Pickle Ricks.
And that was just walking through one hotel lobby.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that. And, you know, that's the other thing, too, is all of this stuff that we experienced, and we didn't even venture into. I mean, we missed out completely on one of the host hotels. So,
yeah, we
you
never
know,
made like... it over to the Westin. And then the obscure costumes, too. I mean, there was there's a background character, and I think it's Empire Strikes Back, that's a guy running through a hangar holding an... It's supposed to be like some kind of, I don't know, part, but it's obviously an ice cream maker. And I saw a conga line of like seven of those dudes run through the Hyatt lobby at one point. And I was like, not only is somebody cosplaying like the most obscure Star Wars character, there's seven or eight of these guys all showed up together.
I almost, you know, one of the things, just browsing through social media, and if you look at all of the subgroups of Dragon Con, you know, somebody had made a comment of, you know, "Hey, can we start like an obscurities group? So, you know, you just choose one very obscure background character and, you know, have..." You
know. Oh, and I saw like, I don't know, probably at least 10 of those undercover boss Kylo Rens from that Saturday Night Live skit. And they were like all together. There's like 10 of them. And I was like, that's amazing.
Yes.
As we wrap it up here for another year at Dragon Con, do you have a favorite moment, highlight?
I don't know how many more times you want to ask that question. I think for me, you know, just because I didn't buy, you know, the package to meet and greet with Stan Lee, but, you know, the fact that, you know, I was able to see him, you know, within a couple of feet of myself and everything, and, you know, like I said, be... three people that just happened to be on that particular hallway at that moment, like, that to me is probably one of the coolest highlights.
Yeah, that, and I think for me, you know, seeing Rooker up close, and then also, you know, you'll hear it next episode, but we did an interview with Steve Bloom, who is like a famous voice actor. He's currently Zev on the Star Wars Rebels, but he was Spike Spiegel on Cowboy Bebop. Like I said, I managed to maintain my professionality through the interview, but once the mic's off, I'm like, dude, I love Cowboy Bebop. Like, I may have fangirled just a little.
Yeah. And we've got, you know, photos that we'll be uploading to the website of, you know, the different guests that, you know, were gracious enough to give us pictures and everything else. And, you know, as well as some of the other shenanigans that took place, you know, throughout Dragon Con.
And of course, our annual Dragon Con cigar meetup was great. I mean, we actually overloaded the red phone booth.
We filled to capacity. They were literally turning people away.
Yeah, when I left, there was a line of people waiting outside trying to get into the party. I mean, it was awesome. And with that, I think we'll wrap this up. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also available on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. You can pick up your sweet Cigar Nerd shirts at RealMenSmokeCigars.com. We also have a Zazzle store. Links are on our website. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Cigar Nerd Pod. And with that, Last Dragon Con, we do it all again.
God, and everybody listening just went deaf.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.